from Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter, creation of Kumaras and others, text 23. Relation and purport by divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. The four divisions of retired life are the Vaikanasas, Valakilyas, Alumbaras, and Fenapas. The four divisions of the renounced order of life are the Kutichakas, Bhavodas, Hamsas, and Nishkriyas. All these were manifested from Brahma. Purport. Divanashram Dharma, or the institution of the four divisions and orders of social and spiritual life, is not a new invention of the modern age, as proposed by the less intelligent. It is an institution established by Brahma from the beginning of the creation. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, fourth chapter, text number 13. Chaturvarnyam maya srishtam. Vaikanasa valakilya ugumbara fena pavane nyase kutichaka purvam bahodo hamsa nishkriyo. The four divisions of retired life are the Vaikanasas, Valakilyas, Adumbaras, and Fenapas. The four divisions of the renounced order of life are the Kutichakas, Bhavodas, Hamsas, and Nishkriyas. All these were manifested from Brahma. Om Akyanatimantasya Giranjana Shalakaya Chakshuramitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanam Rodhistam Stavitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupagda Mayam Dadati Svapadantitam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasari Gaura Vrindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangam Langayate Girim Yat Kripadam Hamde Sri Gurudinataranam Paramananda Madhavam Sri Chaitanyeshwaram Manchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhyevacha Paditanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna. So, in this part, the creation of the Kumaras and others is explained. In this verse, the different divisions of life, or Varnasham Dharma, are being explained, how Lord Brahma has manifested these different divisions according to the desire of the Lord. And here we hear about retired life. Now we know that there are different types of modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And according to the configuration or the mixture of these modes, people are in different stages or statuses of life. We have the Shudra, the laborer class, which is predominantly under the mode of ignorance. The Vaishyas, the mercantile community, and agriculturalist community, who is predominantly in the mixed mode of goodness, of passion and ignorance. We have the Kshatriyas, or the administrator and warrior class, who is predominantly under the mode of passion, and the Brahmins, which are predominantly under the mode of goodness. Now we say predominantly because the modes are never pure. There's always a mixture. So you find goodness also amongst any place, in any situation. Yep. Everywhere, exactly. So, we cannot say, what is this, you know, what are they saying? Ignorance, passion. Huh? Because there's always a mixture of the modes. The modes are always mixed. Like you don't see any pure white or any pure black. You see all different shapes and shades and colors and mixtures. And, you know, it was white once, but now it's getting a little grayish and then it becomes a little more dark. So, there's no clear-cut separations. And and the different occupations, they have different incentive or different impetus for work. Just like for a laborer class, His main incentive is his sense gratification. He wants to know, how much sense gratification can I afford if I do this work? That is his main motivation. And other stages of life have different motivations. A mercantile person, he wants to know, what is my profit? How much? How much is it going to cost me, and how much is my profit? And an administrator, he wants to know, who's in charge here? Who is the boss? By which rules, by which law are we playing this? And a educator, a Brahmin, he wants to know, okay, what is the value structure? What is the actual rules? And what is the whole purpose behind this activity? So the why is the most important question for a Brahmin. Thus they have different type of impetus. Here, in this verse, the retired life and the renounced life are described. Because according to Varnashram, everybody starts off in student life. Of course, everybody except, because there are different natures. So we know that the Shudra class or the laborer class, for them there's only one ashram, Grihastha ashram. They have to be married. For the Vaishyas, there is Brahmachari and Grihastha. For the Kshatriyas, there is Brahmachari, Grihastha, and Vanaprastha. And for the Sannyasi, they can go all the four. So, here, the last two are described, the renounced, the detached, and the fully renounced life. And again, we can see that it is not a clear cut, either you're in this or you're in that situation, but it is a progression. It is a gradual evolution. Because human life is meant for self-realization. Atato brahma jigyasa. It is not meant to continuously remain within the materialistic mindset. So to become more detached usually happens around the age of 50. Pancha shordvam vanam vrajet. That a person who has labor and who has had family, at one point when the children are grown and they're on their own, is again turning towards more spiritual types of activities. So here, this is described. So there are the Vaikanasa, the section of men who retire from active life and live on half-boiled meals. Now you may think, what is this half-boiled meals? Have you ever had half-boiled meals?
No, I absolutely cooked
that. Or if you come late and everything's cold. That's another option. That's another option. Because they're not pursuing cooking, they're not pursuing sense gratification. So they're just taking whatever happens to come along. So they're happy to just fend for themselves in whichever way. Mm-hmm. They're not having a plan. Like when you have a house, the center of the house is the kitchen, because that's where all the action happens. Mm-hmm. So it's where all the cooking happens, and the eating and the talking. But a person who gets more into a renounced mode, he's not so much worried about that, but he's by himself. So for one person, how much cooking you need to do for one person? Not too much, right? It's not really such a big kind of a deal. So, and that's why usually bachelors or retired people, they eat pretty poorly. Because they're just not too bothered by the whole arrangement. They either eat out or they just, you know, grab something here or there. So half-boiled meals means that. You just take whatever comes along, and you're happy with that. You're not disturbed. Then we have the Valakilya, one who quits his former stock of grain on the receipt of more. In other words, no hoarding. In household life, you accumulate, you know. You have so much stock of everything, and then you have a garage, and you have a go-down, and you have a storage place, and you have a freezer, and you may have a locker somewhere, and you have a bank, and you have safety deposit boxes, and you store stuff everywhere. But in this stage, you don't do that. Whenever you get something new, then you give up the old. Somebody gives you a new pair of socks, you give away your old pair of socks. You don't think, oh, okay, more stuff, good, more things. No, you just, when new things come, you get rid of the old. The Audumbara is one who lives on what he gets from the direction toward which he starts after rising from bed. Now that's an interesting one. Whichever direction you get up from bed and you start walking in the morning, that's the direction you go, and that's how you're going to receive your meal. You're not going to go anywhere else. You're just going to go into that direction. And whatever comes in that direction, that's fine. That's your lot for today. So basically you depend on the Lord and you depend on the will of providence. If anything is in store today in going to that direction, then it's fine. Now, we're very fortunate because in the morning we go to the temple and there's prasadam in the temple. So every day we're blessed because when we go in the direction of Krishna's temple, there will be prasadam. So it's a very fortunate situation. Then the Fedapa, one who lives on the fruits which automatically fall from the tree. So he's not even bothering the tree in taking things from the tree. He waits till the fruits fall from the tree. And then he will pick those fruits. In other words, he does not want to cause any suffering to any living entity. Sometimes you see people there, you know, not only harsh with animals, but they're also harsh with plants. They're harsh with trees. So person in that state will not do that. He will just simply pick up whatever is left. Like now you can see there's so many citrus fruits lying everywhere because people don't even bother picking them up. They just let them rot on the floor. I remember we used to go to the house of my grandparents in the mountains of the inner Switzerland, the old districts where everything started. And they had a little wooden house, and there was wood heating. Very, very simple kind of life. And there was a lot of apple trees in the garden. But because the grandparents were old, they could not really do all the gardening. So there was a lot of apples falling on the ground. And it became very messy. So some of them we picked up, and we made jams, and we made different things with them, but many of them were already spoiled, they were already rotten. And they would also spoil the ground because it became quite muddy from apples. So we used to just pick them up and throw them over the fence because the cows used to love them. They used to go after them like anything. But because there was a fence, the cows couldn't get in. So these are the four different types of detached life where one is not actively pursuing economic development, sense gratification, hoarding, all these different types of activities are not anymore in the mind. And then, if the person is brahminical, they can move further to sannyas, to the fully renounced stage. But again, it's interesting to see that this is not a clear-cut, black and white delineation. Because the first one that we hear is the Nyase, the order of renunciation, is the Kutichak. Now, who is the Kutichak? He lives in the family without attachment. He has a little kutir, a kuti. Huh? He has a little shack outside in the yard. And you may have seen this many times. There's a house, and then there is the big garden, and then there's a shack in the garden. Huh? So, at one point, the old man, when he's done with family life and everything, he moves into the shack. Because there's too much noise going on in the house. You know, there's the grandkids, and there is the relatives, and the this and the that, and he just wants to have his peace of mind. So he moves to the shack. He's still close by, he still gets his meals from the house, but he has shifted his residence to the shack, to the hut. That is the Kutichak. He's still dependent. He's still in touch. He still interacts with the family. He still makes sure everyone's well and, you know, the wife is well, the kids are well, things are going all right. He's there. But he's not considering himself that I'm the king of the castle and everything runs under my command. But he has moved out and he's progressing in his detachment. After the Kutichak, there is the Bahudak, or here called Purvam, Bhavodha. He gives up all material activities and engages fully in transcendental service. So Kutichak Bahudak, that person is not anymore taking the meals from the house. He has moved out from the Kuti. And he is simply living on whatever is being arranged by Providence. He lives by begging, he takes alms, but he's still nearby. He's still in connection with the family situation and making sure everybody's all right. And then you have the Parivrachak Acharyas, the traveling preachers. They have left the circle of the family and the village. They have started roaming. They're wandering mendicants. And they're simply interested in spreading the teachings of the Lord. And then the Paramahamsas, or here, Hamsa, fully engaged in transcendental knowledge, and they are Nishkriyao. They have stopped all activities. They have given up any type of external activities. In that stage, even preaching usually stops, and the person is just engaged in his own bhajan, in his own spiritual cultivation. So we see it is a evolution of consciousness. It is not an external thing. Etam saashtaya paratmanishtam madhyasita purvatavair maharshibi ahantarishyami durantaparam tamo mukundangrini sevayayivad. The Brahmin from Avantipur, he was quoting this shloka, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was also reciting, that I shall cross over this insurmountable ocean of birth and death by firmly taking shelter at the lotus feet of Mukunda. In this way, by following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas and teachers, I shall achieve the same goal, the same desired success, by following their example. So, Srila Prabhupada explains in that purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita that it is not the dress that is sannyas, but it is the attitude, it is the mindset. And he also explains that you can have that mindset, that attitude of detachment in any stage of life. It's not about wearing saffron color cloth or having a danda or having this or that type of position or status. But it is an internal, it is a question of detachment. Like we can see in the life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, that they were all fully focused on giving pleasure to the Lord and engaging themselves in spiritual practice. It was not about the external status. They were all different types of orders, and they would interact in a very congenial way. One of Lord Chaitanya's very close associates was Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit was a Vaishnava sannyasi, and in Puri, he would reside in the Tota Gopinath temple and would engage himself in the worship of the deity and in the study of the Bhagavatam. He would study and recite Bhagavatam every day. And it is stated that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu every day would go to the Tota Gopinath temple to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit. For several hours he would hear the Bhagavatam from him. And Gadadhar Pandit was very instrumental in the dissemination of the teachings and the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But there were others. There were others who were in different statuses of life. There was Shivananda Sena, who was a householder with family. But he brought 200 devotees from Mayapur, Navadvip, to Puri. Every year, he took them on pilgrimage. There were King Prataparudra, who was the king. He was the Raja. He was in charge of the whole affairs. And there were others who were in government position, like Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. They held minister jobs, but they renounced that activity and they became fully devoted to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So you can be a devotee of Lord Chaitanya and be in any ashram, in any varna, in any status of life. That is not the consideration. Kiba vipra kiba nyasi shudra kena no ye krishna tattva veta se guru hoy. If you know krishna tattva, if you know the truth about the Lord, then you can become a guru, you can become a teacher, and you can enlighten people in this science of Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada gives the shloka from Bhagavad Gita, chatur varnyam maya srishtam guna karma vibhagashaha. And often in his talks on this shloka, he is emphasizing the point, guna karma. It is not janma karma. It is guna karma. Sometimes people criticize, they say, what is this caste system? You're categorizing people and you're saying this class and that category. But no, it is not according to birth. It is not arbitrarily, it's not whimsical. It is by occupation, by quality and characteristics, by action. So even modern Western society, which claims to be classless, is actually very caste conscious. Because people want to know, okay, what is your academic background? What is your family background? What are you, you know? They want to know which passport are you holding? Okay, there's different rules for different people from different places. And of course, we know, if you're... Anyhow, no need to get into this. This system is given by the Lord, that this Varnasham Dharma system, and what is it for? It is meant to create order. A system is meant to create order. It is meant to establish order so that people can be peaceful. They don't have to think every day, okay, who am I? And what is my duty? And what am I supposed to be doing? It's like in every situation where you want to have peace and prosperity and productivity, you need some order. It's just like if in Gopal's restaurant, if the cooks every day, they just speculate, okay, what are we going to cook today? How do we feel today? You know, do we feel Italian, or do we feel Indian, or do we feel Aussie, or, you know, how do we feel today? Let's see what our Bob is, you know. Then they may check, okay, what kind of vegetables are there? But it's very arbitrarily, it's called Raganuga, it's the very spontaneous platform. That works for people who are very advanced, but for most people that doesn't work. Most people go by a set menu. So if you want to increase peace, prosperity and productivity, you have a set menu. And you hand it to the cook, and you hand it to the person who does the purchasing, and you say, okay, this is what you do for the week, okay? Now some of you who are more artistic, they feel stifled. They feel, I don't like this. I just want to go by my heart, you know? And that's fine. That works very well for you, for your own sake. But if you want to create peace and harmony, you need to have certain type of systems. Especially when you're dealing with large crowds, when you're dealing with, you know, customers, like you have a few hundred customers every day. You need certain systems. Now these other categories, the people who are more detached, the people who are more dependent on the Lord, their system is whatever the Lord arranges, that's perfectly fine. So there are different mindsets, there are different mentalities, and they're given space. They can all coexist peacefully. They're not conflicting. Just like the sannyasis, now the brahmacharis, they go begging in the morning. Because they're students, they have their regulated activities. They only go to beg in the morning before noon. And they collect a few goods, they bring it back to the ashram, it gets cooked and offered and distributed at a regulated time. Because students, the kids, they need to eat at a regulated time. And they need to be in bed at a regulated time. Then of course the grihasthas, they don't beg, they cook, they have their own household and they're quite regulated in their activities. Then the vanaprasas and sannyasis, they don't go in the morning. They go begging in the afternoon. So when the householders have already eaten, whatever is left over, that is being given to the beggars and to the saints, whoever happens to wander by, they get that. And they're very happy with that. You know, one roti here, one roti there, like that. So they're not bothered. So there are different rules and different strictures, but the mood, the spirit, is of peaceful coexistence and of respect. That nobody wants to encroach upon another person's territory, upon another person's lifestyle. And nobody is giving advice that you have to do what I'm doing. Because you know what I'm doing is best, so you have to do what I'm doing. Did you ever get that type of advice from people?
Never.
They don't even try, right? No, every day you can get, you know, a dozen of those who say, you should just do what I'm doing. and you will be perfectly happy. Mm-hmm. Did you ever hear that? Huh? Plenty, right? Does it work? No, absolutely not. Because everybody's different. So you can't generalize, because we're all different people and we're in different stages of life. So the Upanishad system is very considerate. It is very scientific. And if we apply ourselves to this system, then we will actually find stability, peace, and we can see that we can cultivate our bhajan, we can cultivate our spiritual practice without too much anxiety. Because as long as we're in anxiety, our mind is preoccupied with survival mode. And when you get into survival mode, you're usually not too Krishna conscious. Because you think, okay, something is pushing me, I better push back, otherwise I will not make it. And then usually we push more back than we got pushed, and so it becomes a fight, a struggle for existence. And the understanding that the Lord is there somewhere in this whole thing, and the Lord has got me covered, and the Lord is the one who is actually moving everything, that understanding is usually not in the forefront of one's existence, because one becomes influenced by the lower modes of material nature. Now you might say, how is this possible? It is possible, because tribir gunamayir bhavayir, ebi sarvam yadam jagat, mohitam nabijanati. These gunas, guna means modes. It also means a rope. Like you take one thin thread, and you take three of them and you twirl them together. And you take three of those strands, you twirl them together. You take three of those, you twirl them together. All of a sudden you have a big strong rope. It's very strong, very tight. So in the same thing happens, you take goodness, passion, ignorance, you mix it, you get a very strong rope. And if you think that you're the controller and the enjoyer, you're bound by that very strong rope. So the acharyas, our teachers, have given us the solution of how we can become free from this strong rope, from these gunas, by engaging ourselves in the devotional service of Krishna. Vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udarupasta vegam, etan vegan yuvishaheta diran, sarvam apivam prithivim sashishya. If you make plans to instruct people, like sometimes we get up and we think, I will tell everybody how it is. I will give people good advice. Have you ever given anybody good advice? Have you ever received any good advice? Okay, here is the criteria, what is required if you want to be able to give good advice. You should be able to control vacha, your speech. Anudvegam karam bakyam satyam priyahitam chayat. 1715 describes non-violent communication. That if you want to speak in order to instruct people, that speech should be pleasing, should be beneficial, and it should be truthful. And it should not be insulting to others. It should not belittle them. And it should be related to Vedic scripture. Then, manasa, to control the mind. A person who gives instruction should be able to control his or her own mind. Because if they are lost themselves, then how can they give guidance to others? And krodha, anger. Not to be under the forces of anger. It is very easy to become swayed by anger. And then it becomes very troublesome. People become compromised by anger. And relationships go sour. Because a person acted, talked, looked in a certain way, and people feel very much upset. Then again, jiva, by controlling the tongue in eating, not eating voraciously, but eating only what is required to subsist. And in this way, the belly and the genital will also be controlled. A person who has these six abilities is capable of taking students all over the world. That this is the criterion that is given to us by Srila Rupa Goswami. So, Also, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the first shloka of the sixth chapter, it is also explained, Krishna is explaining the yoga system, and he is also giving the explanation of how we can become free from bondage by dedicating all our work and all our activities for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. And that is the process of liberation. That is the process of self-realization. Because as long as we're acting for our own pleasure, for our own enjoyment, we will always be bound by the fruits of reaction. Why? Because we think, I created this. This is my creation. And thus, I'm controlling it, and thus, I am meant to enjoy it. Huh? Have you ever thought like that? Or is it just me? Huh? You think, I've done this job, I earned this salary, now it's up to me to control and to enjoy this. I've produced this, so now I must be the one. But very often it's not the case. Very often it's not the case. Because we're not the controllers. We're not the enjoyers. We're simply entitled to perform our duty. If we have that attitude, that move of detachment, then we will not be bound by the results of our action. Sometimes the results may be sweet, sometimes the results may be bitter. But a person who is detached is not bound, not by the sweet and not by the bitter fruits. Because such a person is simply acting for the pleasure of the Lord, fulfilling his or her duties, his or her obligations. So, in this Krishna consciousness movement, Srila Prabhupada has given us many tools, many opportunities to engage in such kinds of devotional service. And we can see here in Mahaprabhu Mandir in Melbourne, especially through tremendous prasad distribution, people are becoming influenced in a very massive, in a very big way. You can go out onto the street here, practically anywhere in Australia, but mostly in the big cities, and you tell people, we're the Hare Krishnas, and everybody knows us, and everybody appreciates us because of tremendous prasadam distribution. Because people won't bite the hand that feeds them, for the most part. Some will still try, so you have to be a little careful when you're feeding the lion, you know. Don't get too close. But for the most part, people will not bite the hand that feeds them. Why? Because that poisonous tooth is removed. Srila Prabhupada said that you can conquer a city, you can conquer the world by prasadam distribution. It's like in the early days in the 70s in New York City, the devotees ran into a lot of problems because they would distribute so much literature that the government officials, especially the police force, became quite disturbed and envious because they were going to all the places where they were not supposed to be, including the New York subways. Because in the winter in New York, it's very harsh, very cold. Not like here. This is like the worst it gets. It's okay. It's tolerable. But in New York, you have the blizzards. You have the cold front moving in from the north. So there is snow and ice. And in the city, it really gets nasty. So then the devotees went into the subways. And they were just distributing on the trains. But it's illegal. But because they had made massive prasadam, they were doing these laglus. You know laglu? You make bundi, not raita, but the bundi little balls. And then together with dried fruit and nuts, which are cut up very fine, you make a batter. And you roll it out while it's still warm or hot. You roll it out on a tray. Then you let it cool down and you cut it up into little squares. And they would package those. Have you ever done this, sweet? Try it out. It's highly addictive. Because it's got such a kind of a texture, you know. The bundi, it's like it's cracky, it's crunchy, like rice puffies. And it's got the dried fruit and the nuts. And it would offer this to Radha Govinda. And they would take every day thousands of those and distribute them. So the policeman would come up to the devotee who was distributing in the train and he would say, you know you're not allowed to do this. This is illegal. And the devotee would just be quiet. And then he would say, it's okay, just go to the next compartment, but put three of those sweets in my pocket. Okay? So they would bribe them with prasadam. And in this way, everybody just became completely in love, just with one preparation. No big fancy restaurants, 12-course menus, one sweet. If you have one item that's made nicely, you can conquer a city. Now, New York is not an easy city to conquer, because New Yorkers are not very impressible people. They're not easy to be impressed. Even when Prabhupada came and he came off Jaladutta and he came in his saffron robes with white rubber pointed shoes, people were not impressed, because New York, they have seen everything, you know, they have seen people from all over the world come there. They're not impressed by externals. But if you got something good, if you got something exquisite, they will become impressed. So Prabhupada started preaching in 26 Second Avenue, people started to come from all different backgrounds and walks of life. And they were sleeping there in the storefront. Huh? Why? Because Prabhupada cared for them. And because Prabhupada cooked for them. Huh? Prabhupada would cook every day. Huh? And later on he taught a few boys and girls, and they picked it up and they started. But for over a year and a half, Prabhupada was doing everything himself. The purchasing, the cooking, the cleaning. Till one boy came and asked him, Swamiji, can I help you? And Prabhupada said, yes. I thought nobody would ever ask. Because he didn't know. Maybe the culture is different here. Maybe people just, they're not into this, you know. So he was ready to do everything himself. He was not getting upset and worked out. Hey, I'm 70 plus, you know, I'm the acharya. I'm the chief man here. You have to do what I say. No, he was happily serving the devotees. And because people felt the love and the care that Prabhupada was lavishing upon them, they became committed. And they surrendered. They gave their lives. So prasadam can conquer the hearts. So if we engage in massive prasad distribution, we can have big impact. Like now there's this big project coming up for the new kitchen. And it requires a lot of effort. It requires a lot of teamwork. But it will enable us to actually have an even bigger, a major impact on this city. Because yes, people are nice. They do take books and they do give donations. But for the most part, it is prasadam and harinam that is actually making the impact. Like you can see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to how many people did he talk philosophy? Tell me, who do you remember? Who did he talk philosophy to? Who are those people? I know it's early in the morning before breakfast. The brain is not yet really fully there. But, Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, who else? Rupan Sanatan Goswami, who else? Yes. Ramananda Roy, yes. Prakashananda Saraswati, Gadadhar Pandit. Half a dozen people he taught philosophy. For all the others, kirtan and prasadam. So, that should be our strategy. Doesn't mean we should not distribute the books, because people need to read the books so that they will become convinced about the kirtan and the prasadam strategy. But for the masses, it's kirtan and prasadam. And that will work the best. I was in Vladivostok, Russia, far east, and I talked to a devotee who went distributing books in a town far up north, very far up north, where they have the mines, very cold area. And he told me that when they arrived in that town, it was evening, and they wanted to find a place to stay. So they came with all their books and all their luggage. And the hotel owner, a lady, she said, there's no vacancy, there's no room, there's nobody, nothing, go. But it was very late, so they said, can we leave our books here? And they saw that actually there was a lot of vacancy in the hotel, but the lady just was not nice. She just didn't want them. So anyway, they kept the books there and they went to another place. And when they came back the next day, the lady said, "Please stay with us. You have to stay here. I'll give you free room." They said, "We already have a room. We don't need free room. We just came to pick up our books." She said, no, you have to stay with us. I give you free room." They said, no, it's okay. We have already. We can't stay in two places, so it's fine." So they just wanted to get the books. So she said, no, I need to do something to help you. So can I buy some books?" So okay, she bought some books. Then the devotees asked her, "Why did you change your mind? You know, like yesterday you were not very friendly, and today you're very friendly, and this is very strange." So she said, "Last night I had a dream, and there was this lion who was screaming at me and said, I'm gonna kill you because you did not give shelter to my devotees." So she was very frightened, because she had some darshan. So another time he was distributing books in a train station, and there was some young hooligans, some rough crowd. There was some low-class characters. So he somehow ended up in a whole circle of them. And they started, you know, picking at his clothes and teasing him and trying to pull his books and like that. And one came and just punched him right in the face. And it was a very dangerous situation. So he just remembered. Jesus said, when they slap you, you should give the other cheek. So he just said, "Okay, why don't you hit me also here on this side?" And the guy just was completely shocked. And they all just ran away, screaming, because they realized, because the Lord is in the heart. They realized, don't mess with this guy. This guy's fearless. Another time he was distributing, and there was a man with his small daughter. And they came by and they looked at the books. And the girl really wanted to have a book. She really was attached. She wanted to have a book. She wanted to keep it. But the man, the father, he said, "No, we don't want this. We're out of here." And he just kept pulling, yanked the girl away by her arm. The girl was crying. She started to cry. And she was crying and crying. The devotee heard how the cries got less and less and less as they were walking away. And then the cries got more and more and more. And they came back. Because the girl would not give up. She was relentless. She's like, "I want this." So till she got the book. Then she would give up crying. And she had the book. So this Varnashram system is based on trust. People are not insecure. People are not in confusion. They don't have identity crisis. There is trust amongst the different stages of life. Trust is the highest form of motivation. If you want to motivate somebody, invest some trust into that person. I was once in Mayapur, just last year, and my spiritual master had a throat problem. So I had a herbal spray. And I brought it and I gave it to him, and he, without looking, he just took it and he used it, and he said, "Just see how much I trust you. I don't even look what's inside." So but we have to earn that trust. We have to earn that trust by our activities, because people, they hear a little bit, but they watch very closely. It's like with children, you know. We can tell the kids, "Do this, don't do that, do this, don't do that." We can give so many type of rules and strictures. But usually, it doesn't work that well, right? But when they see what the parents do, when they see the example of their family members, then they tend to pick up on that. Why? Monkey see, monkey do. So if a guy asks you outside, "What did that guy talk about in there?" You can tell him, "Monkey see, monkey do." Whatever the monkey sees, that's what the monkey's going to do. So when people come in touch with you, they will listen a little bit, but not that much. But they will watch very closely. And so whatever it is that you do, you can be most likely that they will copy some of that. Have you heard of Om Vegetarian? imitation is the highest form of praise. If somebody imitates you, that's a compliment. That's praise. So don't see it as a threat. Don't see it as an insult. See it as praise. But don't get too comfortable on the praise. Because that guy's got 3 shops. We got 1. I mean, we have 2, but you know. So don't get too comfortable. And we should learn. We should pick up a good thing, even from a dubious place. When you see gold somewhere lying in the gutter, do you just walk by and you say, it's in the gutter, you know, I'm not going to... Nasty. No. Said, when you see gold, you should pick it up, even from a dirty place. You can pick up a girl even from a family whose background is not such, you know, high class. Even a person who is not from a very educated position. If he has got good advice, take it. Take it. That is a person who is wise, who is mature. They have this type of attitude. So as devotees, we are trying to become wise. And wisdom or maturity doesn't simply come with age, because we have seen plenty of old fools in the world. I met a friend in Melbourne, and he's getting pensioned this year. And so I asked him, so how is it? How do you feel? Are you more detached? Are you more attached to Krishna? Are you more dedicated to your spiritual practice? What is, you know, what is it? Because you think 65, right? Pension. You think like, okay, I mean, at 50, we should start letting go. At 65, we should be ready, right, to be fully on track. And he said, a Ferrari is still a Ferrari. Which, for those of you who don't know what I mean, Ferrari, for a person from his cultural background, means all the good things in life. So a Ferrari will still be a Ferrari, even if you're 65, even if you're 85. And you will still think, wow, what a nice car. Unless you actively pursue your taste. Vishyavini vartante nirahrasya dehinaraso varjam rasopisya param drishvani vartate. When we cultivate our higher taste by the practice of Krishna consciousness, it becomes very easy to give up the lower taste. And if you cultivate your knowledge also, if you think, okay, that car is costing about 300 to 350K, a third of $1 million here, how much is insurance, how much is registration, how much is parking, how much is the worry that something's going to happen to it, somebody's going to scratch it just because they're envious, how much petrol does it consume, and do I really need this? Do I really need this? So maturity means I have a higher taste and I know what is actually valuable. So maturity, wisdom, doesn't come with old age. The only thing that matures with old age is cheese. Cheese matures with old age. But people don't mature. Actually, you can see how the human devolution... it's not the evolution, it's a devolution. How people, as it goes on with older age, sometimes they become very infantile, very childish. Now, if a child is childish, that's okay, that's cute. Because it's a kid, right? It's supposed to be childish. But if an old person behaves like a kid, it becomes quite annoying, quite distractive. So Srila Prabhupada touched countless people's lives by his mercy, by his compassion. I was distributing books in Aarhus, Denmark, in front of the train station, and there was a lady on a bicycle. And I showed her the book, and she said, I know this man. And I said, it's not possible. This man left the world already in 77. And she said, I know this man. I'm from Hollywood, California. Now, Hollywood is a suburb of Los Angeles, you know, where they make the movies. So when she was a teenager, she heard from a friend that the Swami is in L.A. So they hitchhiked to L.A. to that neighborhood where Prabhupada was. And she said, as he got out of the car and walked to the temple, we were throwing rose petals on the floor. And he walked over them. And then my friend said, we should keep those because the holy man had walked on them. And she said, then we collected them and I've kept them and I still have them today. And then she took the books, she gave me a donation and she said, I've not given you enough, I need to give you more. So she opened her grocery bag on her bicycle and she wanted to give me her fruit, her vegetables, her bread. She wanted to give me everything she had except her bicycle. Why? Because she had met Prabhupada once and collected, thrown and collected the rose petals. That if you come in contact with the dust particles of the lotus feet of the pure devotee, then our life changes. That is the only way how our life can tremendously change and benefit. And what does it mean, dust particle of the lotus feet of the pure devotee? It means we hear the instructions and we perform seva. We perform some service. Any type of service. Clean something. If you see some trash, pick it up. Help somebody. Carry something. Serve something. There's so much opportunity for service. And if you can't do anything, just hear and chant about Krishna. There's different opportunities. So this process of Krishna consciousness is not a stereotype. It is not a black and white, cookie cutter type of an arrangement. So in whichever status of life we're in whichever situation we might find ourselves in, if we connect ourselves with Krishna through this process of bhakti yoga, we can actually make spiritual advancement. But the underlying principle is mutual respect, appreciation and service. That's amongst all the ashrams. There's no rivalry, there's no fighting for supremacy, but it is congenial, mutual coexistence. This is called society, community. So this is what we're trying to create, and it's a big challenge. Because in Kali Yuga, everybody wants to be the boss. Everybody wants to be in charge. And that's just a little bit difficult. So we will get more detached when we see how Krishna is actually in charge and how he and Srimati Radhika are actually moving everything along. So to have that type of realization is very helpful. One last prasadam story and then we will go and take prasadam. I was distributing books in an airport in America, and I usually don't like airports because it's a very artificial environment, especially if you want to deal with people in a more human way. Anyhow, there was a middle-aged man, and I approached him, I gave him the book, and I said what I had to say. And I asked him for a donation, and he just wouldn't respond. He was non-responsive. So I said something else, and again, no response. So I tried from all different angles and sides, and it was just no response. Have you ever had that situation, that there was no response? Like you call the temple and nobody picks up the phone? Or you try it, you're in front of somebody and you talk to them, but there's no response. They just, sometimes they even smile at you, but there's just no other response. But he was smiling, so I thought, you know, he's not mad, he's not upset, he's, you know, it's just something is not clicking. I'm not doing something right. Something is not working out. So what do you do when you don't know what to do? You just pray to the Lord in your heart of hearts. You say, Krishna, I can't do this. You please help. So as I was praying, he started kind of thinking. And after a while, he was kind of like 1984 rainbow gathering, San Francisco. I ate donuts in strawberry yogurt sauce. And he was describing strawberry malpura. Have you had strawberry malpura? Have you had? Pardon me? No more strawberries. No. Gone.
Finished.
All.
Gone for good.
Gone for good. Anyway, just for the sake of experiment, for exercise, somebody can cook this preparation. Because if you have not tasted that, half your life is wasted. you wasted your life. You lived for naught. It was all for nothing. So after many, many years, this memory was stuck in his mainframe. He couldn't get it out of his head. That taste was just there. So after he had described him, I said, yeah, I know what you're talking about. And he said, is this the same thing? I said, same thing. He said, how much? Okay, how much? I want it. How much? Because I want that same taste. So once somebody had that taste of prasad, or that taste of sadhu sangha, that taste of seva, they want it back. I was talking about that lady yesterday from Credit Suisse, from a banking institution, who came and helped serving out prasad. Middle-aged lady. And she said, this is the first time in my life that I've done something for free. So far, I've only charged, and I've charged big bucks. That is the first time I'm doing something for free. But it has made me feel so good that the only question on her mind was, when is the next event that I can feel the same thing that I've just felt now? So this is convincing, because higher taste is convincing. To give people rules and regulations and laws and do this and don't do that, it's not so appealing. It's not so convincing. But if we can cultivate this higher taste, and share it with others, the Krishna consciousness becomes very attractive and very convincing. So to the degree that we have developed, cultivated our taste, to that degree we can convey it. But sometimes it's interesting, because you may not be very fired up, but the person who is coming in touch with Krishna consciousness through you is more fired up and more enthusiastic than you are. Have you ever found that? That you're talking to somebody who is more enthusiastic than you are? And you think, like, how is this possible? You know, like, it's not supposed to be that way. Right? I'm the guy who is doing the talk here. Okay? It's me, right? No, it's not you. The potency can work even if you're trying to obstruct it. So sometimes people say, I don't like organized religion. And I say, welcome, that makes two of us. And you're with the Hare Krishnas, you're in the right place, because this movement is going on despite our attempts for organization. And this is not meant to criticize, this is not meant to belittle. It's just, you know, we've only been around for a little while, and the potency of Lord Chaitanya is moving. We should just not try to obstruct it. So sometimes people ask me, how do you distribute books? I say, I try not to get in the way. I try not to obstruct. I just try to keep myself out of the scenario so that the energy, the mercy can flow. Because as soon as I put myself in the center, some people may say, I like you, but for the wrong reasons. And a lot of people will say, well, I don't like you. You're from Switzerland? Why don't you go back to Switzerland? And then we have a problem here. So as soon as we put ourselves in the center, people will either like you for the wrong reasons, or they will dislike you for whatever reasons. But when we accept that Krishna is the center, Krishna is the source, and when we focus on that, everything works. Everything works. So, day before yesterday, I was in front of Crossways and talked to the first girl, gave her a book. And she was kind of borderline, but anyway, she took it. Then her friend came from the shop, and from a clothing store. And sometimes you know how it is. The friend comes and they say, what is that? Why did you do that for? You know, so sometimes you're a little worried, you know, that friends will influence each other like that, because that's the way how friendship goes. But that lady came out and she said, wow! And I gave her the bhakti, the art of eternal love, and she looked at the picture and she said, Radha Krishna, Sita Ram, this is wonderful. And I said, how do you know about this stuff? White girl. So she said, I met Sitapati, you know, this devotee, Sitapati. And he told me everything about it, you know, Sita and Ram and Radha and Krishna and this and that, and this is really good. And she was totally fired up. So the other girl was like, wow, really? Okay. So, why? Because she had met a devotee who had inspired her in her Krishna consciousness. So that means we can all make a difference. We can all do our little bit just by being blissful in our own Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada said, chant Hare Krishna, be happy. Can you do that? That's the only job description. Can you chant and be happy? Is that possible? It's not a rhetorical question. We should ask ourselves that. Can I just chant and be happy? To the degree that we actually have faith in this process, to the degree the Holy Name will reveal Himself to us. And then we can be part of that magic. We can see how people will become influenced. Yesterday I had one book left. No, two books. Let's give you these two and then I'm done. And you know there's that fruit stand at the corner? And I know that guy has seen us since 20 years. So I just walked up to him and I said, how's it going? You know, I know wintertime, it's not such a good time for selling fruit. It's not so busy. Anyway, we chatted a little bit. We talked about life and this and that and the other thing. And I just gave him a book, that little book. And he said, I've been here for 20 years since Gopal is there. So, but he was very happy because I just talked with him, you know, about life and how things are going without trying to preach to him. So, and I just gave him the book and he gave me some fruit, he gave me some apple, and we both walked away happy. And then the last book went in a tram to a young boy from Vietnam. So, we just have to see the opportunity. And a lot of times you preach by not preaching. And that sounds contradictory, doesn't it? One teacher once said that you should always preach, and sometimes you should also talk. Which means that you are showing by your own example, and sometimes you should also open your mouth. Thank you for your kind attention. All goes to Srila Prabhupada. Too late for questions today. But tomorrow we'll have the last talk and tonight there's a seminar. Thank you for your patience with us. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.